Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I'm in Minnesota, still on our trip, traveling around. I just want to thank all those that have come to the meetings in Minnesota and in Texas for coming out. And I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun talking to many of you and just enjoying our time together. So thank you for that. Subscribers, thank you so much for supporting what we do. We really appreciate it, and we're thankful for all that you do for us. Those watching on Rumble, please like, share, and follow. And those listening on the different podcast platforms, if you would consider giving us a 5-star review, if you like the podcast, that would be great. All of our ratings were erased last summer, and so we're trying to slowly build those back up. Today, I'm going to be speaking with a friend of mine, Alex Newman, and the topic is the deep, dark history of education in America. Most people know it's corrupted, it's dumbing the kids down, it's no good. But when you go back 150 years or so and see the purposefulness behind the corruption of it, it's pretty sobering. And it's important information that we need to know and you need to share with others. It's been so purposeful in even the spiritual side of things to making sure that God and Christianity are gone, but not just leaving a void there, then bringing in pagan New Age spirituality. And you're going to hear him talk about some of the top influencers of government education in America, the people that had the most influence. They were talking to spirit guides, in their own words, to get the path forward to educate our children. So it really is quite amazing, but I think you're really going to enjoy this. And Alex Newman's always just a great communicator on some of these key issues. But thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, everybody, and thank you so much, Curtis. It's wonderful to be here. Really appreciate you having me on Agenda Weekly. Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be part of this. And I know you asked me today to talk about education issues. How did it happen that our children are being turned against God, against the Bible, against their country, against the fundamental values that underpin Christian civilization? And the history of this is something that I have spent a lot of time looking into. It, in my opinion, it's one of the most important issues, is this indoctrination of our children, the dumbing down of our children, the sexualization of our children. And what I discovered in my research is that we are literally here dealing with doctrines of demons being taught to children. And I mean that in the most literal sense possible. So if you look at the history of how the government took over education, the people who dominated at every step of the way were people who rejected Christianity, were people who wanted to fundamentally transform America away from what it was historically, a Christian nation based on the principles of liberty outlined in the scriptures, into a kind of a utopian collectivist society. And the evidence for that is just absolutely overwhelming. So I do have some slides to share with everybody today, and hope it'll be a blessing for folks. We'll go through some of it very quickly, and we'll spend a little bit more time on some of the other stuff. But there's just so much to share here. So I'm going to share my screen so everybody can see what I am seeing. And so here we go. So when I say doctrines of demons, I mean that in the most literal sense. So the Bible actually warns us about these doctrines of demons in 1 Timothy chapter 4. The Spirit expressly says that in later times some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons. And unfortunately, that is more real than I think even most Christians understand. Jesus gave us a really important litmus test through which we can analyze everything. And that is, it's in Matthew 12, verse 30. It's also recorded in Luke. He says, whoever's not with me is against me. And before we get into what is happening on the education front, this is kind of a truism, but this comes, again, from the scriptures. Luke chapter 6, verse 40 says, students are not greater than their teacher, but the student who is fully trained will become like the teacher. And that is why the poll data shows that 70% of my generation, millennials, now say they will vote for socialists in the future. Folks, think about that, right? This is unbelievable. If you look at millennials, again, my generation, a majority now reject even the label Christian. And then you look at even among those who do claim to be Christian, we've got a catastrophe here. Less than 6% of my generation has a biblical worldview, according to Barna's surveys. Less than 5% of Generation Z has a biblical worldview. And of course, the ultimate agenda is, as you guys know, this one world system. And they very much do regard our children as their children. They see our kids as the tool to bring about this new system. And if you want to really understand, I think the simple way is just take everything God teaches and flip it upside down. God says, thou shalt not steal. They say, well, resources are not equitably distributed. And so we're just going to have to steal all the resources and we'll allocate them according to our superior wisdom. God said, don't murder. Well, you know, is that really a human? It's a clump of cells, whatever. So we see on every issue, every time they're going to come down on the wrong side of what God teaches. And there are many examples of that. But it's not just my opinion that so-called education is being used to prepare the way for a global system. In fact, these people will tell you, if you just read their documents, if you listen to what they're saying. And you've all heard the New World Order stuff. I didn't even think we needed to spend time on it. But George H.W. Bush was the first one who really, as president, announced that we were headed into a New World Order where a credible UN was going to use its peacekeeping role to bring about the vision of the UN's founders. And along that road, one of the critical international instruments to bring that about is Agenda 21, which Bush signed back in 1992 after the Earth Summit. Here he is talking about it.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration.
That's a real thing, right? And Nancy Pelosi, leader of the Communist Party in Congress.
The Earth Summit Environmental Leadership Act, as this is known, presents us with an opportunity to follow up on the important work of the Earth Summit to develop its blueprint, Agenda 21, for global environmental action. HCON Res 353 outlines a comprehensive national strategy for sustainable development in accordance with the principles of Agenda 21, to be coordinated under the leadership of a specific office and at the direction.
So you get it, right? The Uniparty fully embraces this. If you're not familiar with Agenda 21, they described it as an array of actions intended to be implemented by every person on Earth. They said effective execution is going to require a profound reorientation of all human society, unlike anything the world has ever experienced. And of course, they know that we are the bitter clingers, as Barack Obama famously called us. And so they have a plan for that. If you go to Agenda 21, if you go to chapter 36, this is part of the multi-100-page document, this international agreement signed by every government basically in the world. They said education is critical for promoting sustainable development. They said it's indispensable for changing people's attitudes. They said it's critical for giving children the ethical awareness, the values, the attitudes, the skills, and behavior consistent with sustainable development. They said it needs to include spiritual development, and it needs to be included in all disciplines. And they're not messing around, folks. They say sustainable development, this ideology from the UN, which back in 1976, the UN in the Vancouver Declaration said this means we have to get rid of private ownership of land, right? We're talking about a total restructuring of society away from free markets, Christian society, basic liberties toward a totalitarian collectivist society. But they will tell you that education is where it all starts. Here's a little video from UNESCO, the UN's education agency.
Sustainable development begins with education.
It begins.
But global education.
And it's got to be global education, right? That's from the UNESCO. I actually have a copy of this book here. It's called Rescue Mission Planet Earth, a children's edition of Agenda 21. If you look on the back, it's published by UNESCO, the UN Education Agency, UNEP, the UN Environment Program, UNICEF, another children's agency for the UN, and then the UN Development Program. So it's a UN book. It's called Rescue Mission Planet Earth, a children's edition of Agenda 21. Right here in the very beginning, they've got a nice quote from Al Gore. I want to show you this. It's right here in the introduction. Okay. Let's see if you can see this. And I want to read it to you. This is Al Gore quoted here. He says, as chairman of the Space Subcommittee in the Senate, I strongly urge the establishment of a mission to planet Earth, a worldwide monitoring system staffed by children designed to rescue the global environment, folks. And of course, for good measure, they also quote former Soviet dictator Mikhail Gorbachev, who says, we've got to change the very foundations of modern civilization. Okay, got to save the planet from destruction. So they're absolutely serious here. And remember the formula I gave you, just take whatever God teaches and flip it upside down. Well, God's first command to mankind, of course, was that we should be fruitful and multiply. And so here you have one of the pages in this book, you got these Hindu deities up in the clouds, all mad that these storks are delivering all these babies. And on the adjacent page, it says that the earth groans every time it registers another birth.
I want to just interject something here. Even in the children's textbooks from 30 years ago, it's saying babies are bad. Well, as we've talked about on several recent episodes of Agenda Weekly, the depopulation agenda and everything, that is their path forward. No more babies. It's a lot easier to stop babies from being born in the future because of all the toxins in our systems where we're not capable of being fertile and having children than actually mass murdering the 7+ billion people that need to go. They're happy to have wars and famines and things as well, but a few weeks ago when we were talking about that and in that movie, they said we want no more babies. You really realize how dark and evil their agenda is.
So they're deadly serious about this, folks. So you go to the 2030 agenda, which the UN calls the master plan for humanity. This was adopted by every government in the world back in 2015. Again, education is the centerpiece. Goal number four says that by 2030, all students, all learners need to acquire the knowledge, not just necessary to submit to this, but to promote it, right? And they go on and say you got to have education for sustainable lifestyles, human rights, which means the opposite of what we in America understand as human rights, gender equality, which just means radical feminism, smash the family. Global citizenship is another one, right? They're deadly serious about this. They've got little board games that the kids can use. What's the best way to fight poverty? They have to know the answer to move to the next box. The correct answer, they say, is you got to share the wealth produced in the world. In other words, global Marxism is the way to fight poverty, which is, of course, utterly ridiculous. So let's go through a quick history of education, right? If you go back to the very beginning, the very first settlers to arrive here in North America and start building a community, the good folks up in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, the Pilgrims, the Puritans, they passed the Old Deluder Satan Act in 1647. And what they said was that one chief project of that Old Deluder Satan is to keep men from knowledge of the scriptures. Right? So they said, for that reason, we need every person in this colony to be able to read, so they could read the Bible, so that Satan will not deceive them. And then if parents were unwilling or unable to teach their children how to read, then this community's person would help that child learn how to read. Of course, most of the education did happen at home with the parents, but it was good to have a kind of a backup plan in this little Bible colony, if you will. The university they established, Harvard, their original rules and precepts in 1640 said let every student be plainly instructed and earnestly pressed to consider well the main end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life, and therefore to lay Christ in the bottom as the only foundation of all sound knowledge and learning.
400 years ago, that was Harvard University's mission statement. Can you believe that? That's how successful they have been. Now Harvard is a atheistic, evolutionary Marxist training camp to destroy America and the world and enslave them in the totalitarian globalist, you know, agenda, world government. Pretty amazing.
Here's how kids used to learn how to read. You had the New England Primer, then eventually that was displaced by the Blueback Speller. So the kids would learn their letters and their theology together, right? A, in Adam's fall, we sinned all. B, thy life to mend, this book attend. You can just go through the letters and you see incredible lessons here. This is how young Americans used to learn how to read. Alexis de Tocqueville came here in the 1830s and was so astounded by what he found. He wrote in his book that every citizen receives the elementary notions of human knowledge. He's moreover taught the doctrines and the evidences of his religion, the history of his country, the leading features of its constitution. And he said, particularly in New England, it's extremely rare to find a man imperfectly acquainted with all these things, and a person wholly ignorant of them is a sort of phenomenon, which today it's exactly the opposite, right? Today, if you find somebody who is not wholly ignorant of those things, you say, oh, well, you must be homeschooled, right? And of course, it's true, all by design. If you go back to 1776, we had almost every major Christian denomination was running its own school system to supplement what the parents were doing. You had hundreds of entrepreneurs setting up private schools, private schoolmasters all over the city. And then Robert Owen came along. So this guy was a collectivist, a utopian, married into a wealthy textile family, and had very radical ideas. He claimed to be fighting what he described as the Great Trinity of Evil. And this Trinity of Evil, he said, private property, irrational systems of religion, by which he meant particularly Christianity, and then marriage, right, founded on this allegedly irrational system of religion. So that was what he was waging war on. Notice all three things that God has ordained, right? Thou shalt not steal, private property, God ordained marriage, and of course, God ordained the church. So each of those under assault by Robert Owen. And he wrote an essay in 1813 where he called for basically the government to take over education. And he recounts in his autobiography how the Prussian ambassador picked up this these essays he had written about how the government should educate children. And he says in his autobiography that the Prussian dictator so much approved of these ideas that he ordered his own national education system based on this idea, right? Basically instilling obedience, collectivism, and worship of the state, the first ever education system of the state, by the state, and for the state. He started a commune, Robert Owen did, called New Harmony. No private property. You weren't supposed to have a monogamous marriage partner. Definitely no Christianity. And surprise, it failed in less than 2 years. But he concluded that the real problem was that these children had not been sufficiently indoctrinated into the collectivist way of thinking about things. And so for this reason, he established what a whistleblower later described as a secret society modeled on the Carbonari of Europe. This whistleblower, his name was Orestes Brownson, wrote extensively on this. He said he knew about it because he was working for it in the state of New York. He said he knew a considerable portion of New York was organized because I myself was one of the agents for organizing it. And he's got some really interesting things to say in there. He says that the main goal was to get government schools adopted, and they wanted to use this to fundamentally transform the country. But he says the great object was to get rid of Christianity. Again, this is a whistleblower who became a Roman Catholic and abandoned his work on behalf of this wicked operation. But he said the plan was not to make open attacks on religion, although we might belabor the clergy, bring them into contempt where we could. But really, we wanted to establish a system of state, and we said national schools from which all religion was to be excluded, from which nothing was to be taught but such knowledge as is verifiable by the census, and to which all parents were to be compelled by law to send their children. And of course, at the time, that sounded absolutely crazy, right? Americans could never dream that the government would force them to hand over their children to be indoctrinated into an anti-Christian worldview. And yet that's exactly what happened. Now, going back to Robert Owen for a moment, close to the end of his life, in his final year on this planet, he revealed something very, very profound about where he was getting his ideas from. He hosted a conference called it was in 1857, the Congress of the Advanced Minds of the World. And he talked about how he was communicating with spirits. Okay. He wrote extensively on this. You can read his speech that he gave there. He says, there's spirits now around us and about us. They have the superior intelligence. They've been purified and perfected, and they now want to transform the world, a glorious change for humanity. And he talks about how he was communicating with these spirits. He says that they were doing taps on furniture and on walls, that they were moving things around, kind of like a Ouija board, moving things around and pointing to certain letters. Very, very interesting stuff. I will remind you real quick of what the scriptures say on this. Leviticus 19 says, do not turn to mediums or necromancers. These are people who talk to the dead. Do not seek them out and then make yourself unclean. Leviticus 20, the next chapter, says a man or woman who's a medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death. Okay, that's how serious God took this in the Old Testament among his people. Then in Deuteronomy 18, he actually puts talking to the spirits of allegedly dead people in the same category with burning your son or your daughter as an offering to a demon. Okay, so we're dealing here with very, very wicked, wicked things, wicked ideas. And yet the guy who came up with the idea that the government ought to be educating our children openly said that's where he was getting his ideas from. So, you know, what could go wrong? Okay, now Horace Mann, he was he's known as the father of American public education. He actually traveled to Prussia, studied their system, and he was the man who, with help from the Massachusetts legislature, brought the Prussian system into the United States via Massachusetts. So he got himself appointed as the first ever Secretary of Education of any state. This was back in 1837. And he loved the Prussian model so much that he tried to replicate it in Massachusetts. He wanted to equalize men with this system. He wanted the Bible out under the guise, he said, of reducing sectarianism. He said some really interesting things about education generally. He said, we who are engaged in the sacred cause of education are entitled to look upon all parents as having given hostages to our cause. Wow, that's interesting. What he didn't say is that in Massachusetts, when they ordered parents to hand over their children, in some cases, they actually had to call out the militia to force them to comply because parents said no. So after he was done in Massachusetts, Horace Mann went around the country like an evangelist, preaching the good news of salvation by government schools. New England states, mid-Atlantic states started passing laws like this. And by the time the 1900s came around, almost every state had created some sort of government educational system, and the compulsory attendance laws followed shortly thereafter. And that's where John Dewey comes in. He's also very well known as the father of public education in America, although I think in fairness, he needs to share some of the blame with Horace Mann and Robert Owen and some of these other characters. But he was pretty open about his views. He was one of the signers and authors of the Humanist Manifesto. The Humanist Manifesto, if you're not familiar, this was the original one. They've now released a second one called Humanist Manifesto 2. But he says in there that the very first plank is religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. That's interesting. Right? Compare that with the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1, right? So clearly incompatible religious views. There are obviously profound political implications to this as well. Our founding fathers, they got the ideas from the Bible, but they said it was a self-evident truth that God created us equally, that God endowed us with certain unalienable rights, and that the purpose of government was to protect those rights. Well, and John Dewey would say, well, what do you mean? How can you have God-given rights when there's no God? You're self-existing. The universe is self-existing and not created. So, folks, we have a real conflict here in these worldviews. And America was a thoroughly Christian society at that time. And so one of the other fellows who signed this Humanist Manifesto, his name was C.F. Potter. He wrote a book in 1930 called Humanism, a New Religion, where he said that education was the most powerful ally of humanism. Every public school would be a school of humanism. What is your theistic Sunday school meeting an hour once a week going to do, teaching only a fraction of the children against 5 days of humanistic teachings? And of course, the answer was not much, right? And they still talk like this. I do want to encourage you to think about this humanist religion for another moment. If there is no real God, then that makes us God. I am the end of everything. If there is no real God to tell us what's right and wrong, I can decide for myself what's right or wrong. Notice the similarities with what Satan said in Genesis chapter 3, right? God knows when you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. So this is a diabolical worldview. It's a religion from the pit of hell. And yet, the Supreme Court mandated it all over the country. 1962, they banned prayer in school. 1963, they banned the Bible in school. They cited the First Amendment, which is, of course, ludicrous. The First Amendment is written to restrain Congress from establishing a national religion, not to prevent prayer or Bible in a school. And the judge who wrote the dissent here, Justice Potter Stewart, brilliant dissent in this case. He said this refusal to permit religious exercise is not the realization of state neutrality, but rather the establishment of a religion of secularism. So that's exactly what it is, folks. This is the establishment of a religion of secularism. And we need to understand it in those terms. Otherwise, what's happening here does not make sense, period. Okay. It has gotten, of course, much more advanced, and now they are masters at discrediting Christianity, discrediting parents, discrediting the Bible, discrediting pastors in the minds of these children. One of the things that the UN promotes is what's called values clarification. They actually introduced this into public schools in America back in the 1960s. And it's a very simple process that they use. They actually used it on me in high school in Brazil. My geography teacher did this for us. And so we're sitting in class. She says, all right, folks, you're on the ship. The ship is sinking and you got to hop off into the life raft. But there's only enough space for 10 of you, and 11 of you just hopped in the life raft. So now who are you going to murder for the greater good. And you've got, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, an Indian chief, whatever. And then the kids are supposed to figure out who would be the best person to throw overboard and kill. Now, the obvious solution here would be, well, I'll just take turns. You know, I'll swim alongside the raft and we'll take turns so nobody has to die. But no, what happens here in the minds of the children is, well, hey, my parents said we shouldn't murder people. Pastor said we shouldn't murder. In fact, didn't God say thou shalt not kill? What do they know, right? Clearly, they weren't thinking this through. Obviously, there's a time and a place where it is right to murder and kill for the greater good. And so they, in one instant, discredited parents, pastors, and the Bible all in one fell swoop. And they brag about this. I mean, one of the leading luminaries behind this idea talked about how we can undo what parents have been instilled in their children for 15 years. We can do it in 15 minutes. And of course, they're right. And they're now at the point where they brag about changing all of what is in the minds and the hearts of your children.
Values clarification, what a clever way to say we're going to remove all values from the system. So then when the students are void of having values, they will self-destruct in no time at all. Back in the 1980s, they started this life raft analogy thing they would push on our students and young children, where they would give you the different types of people that are on a raft with you. And they would give you a scenario that's not true or real or would ever happen in real life, but you have to decide one of the people to throw overboard and kill to save everybody else. If everybody stays on, then everyone will die, which is never a real scenario. But they did that, and then they carefully described the different people on the raft, a Down syndrome person, an elderly man, and they're then forcing a little child to decide who they're going to kill, trying to justify that in their mind. Well, if we didn't kill them, we would all die. That's communism. That's where the collective is everything and the individual is nothing. But they did that. And I remember talking to my college student employees over the years when I was in the restaurant business, and they couldn't believe I wouldn't throw the Down syndrome child over, or the elderly person that's already lived their life or whatever. And they asked me, well, what would you do, Curtis? And I remember going, I'll tell you tomorrow. Let me think about that. In that scenario, which is not a real scenario, and none of their little hypotheticals are, but they're forcing you to just be evil by deciding something you would never need to decide. But I said, if that scenario were real, whoever is the strongest, healthiest person on the raft should voluntarily get out and try to swim the shore the best they can. And they, again, in their brainwashing, they said that's the only person we're saving, whoever's the healthiest, youngest, and strongest. Exact opposite of a biblical Christian worldview.
To go back to George H.W. Bush for a moment, he really started the ball rolling when it came to trying to nationalize education in America. And one of the people he hired to lead this effort was Shirley McCoon, Dr. Shirley McCoon. I'm going to show you a little video of her speaking to the nation's governors at a summit convened by George H.W. Bush. Listen to this.
Fix up these schools and taking care of them. Rather than the issue of understanding that what we're into is a total restructuring of the society. What is happening in America today and what is happening in Kansas and the Great Plains is not simply a chance situation and the usual winds of change. What it amounts to is a total transformation of our society. We have moved into a new era.
Total transformation of our society. Right now, listen to the role of the schools in this process.
The other function of schools, which sounds paradoxical and yet in a sense is really not, is the fact that we have to prepare students not for today's society, but for a society that's 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road. And so we have to anticipate what the future is and then move back and figure out what it is we need to do today. That's called anticipatory socialization, or the social change function of school.
The social change function of schools. Isn't that interesting, right? How many parents know about the social change function of schools? And, you know, to just be clear here, these ideas, again, are coming from the pit of hell. Dr. Shirley McCoon, who we just met, co-wrote a book with her friend Dr. Norma Milanovic, And she talks about the light shall set you free, not the light of Christ, but she's talking about her communications with these ascended masters, these spiritual entities that she's dealing with. And she says, we're headed to a new age, and everybody has to learn these teachings if they want to be admitted into the fifth dimension. All right. And to show you just how good they are at this social change function. I want to give you just an example that probably all of us recognize, right? When I was a child back in the 1990s, homosexuality was still a crime across the United States. Sodomy was still against the law. The Supreme Court didn't strike that down until 2001. So what did they do? Well, they went into government schools across the country. They started showing this documentary called It's Elementary, talking about gay issues in school. And here's one of the little segments from this documentary. Check it out.
Let me tell you quickly the background. Today, the law says that if you're the same sex, two men and two women, you can't get married. It is against the law. And I thought that it might be kind of fun for us to sort of be pretend judges for a few minutes. What I'm going to give each of you is a sheet that just tells you that some people think that it's wrong for gays to get married, that it's not natural, and that it goes against what a family is. Other people think that the state should not decide these things, that it should just be up to two adults to decide what they want to do. What do you think the answer to these questions are? Should gays be allowed to marry? Should they not?
I don't see why they shouldn't.
Yeah, so of course the homosexuals should be. Now, if they had told the children the truth, that you need a man and a woman to produce a child, that marriage is a representation of the relationship between Christ and the church, you know, they might have come to a different conclusion. But when you put it that way, well, a homosexual activist tells you there's mean people who don't want loving homosexuals to be married, and then there's, you know, us nice people who think the state shouldn't be involved in that. Well, what do you get? You get the pretend judges on the Supreme Court. You heard him. Striking down marriage laws in all 50 states, and presto, right? White House lit up in rainbow colors. And remember, folks, they couldn't even get homosexual marriage passed on the ballot in California. Okay. They had to do this. They had to brainwash the kids. They had to do it through the courts. And here we are. Now, fast forward to today, we've got drag queen story hour in the schools and all the rest of it. It's an outrage.
Wilhelm Reich in 1932, working with the Frankfurt School, which my movies talk about, he described that the way we're going to get God to disappear from society is to start teaching the young people deviant sexual behavior. That's how sinister and evil they were. That's all the LGBT nonsense is about. That's all it's about. When you get people at a young age involved in deviant sexual behavior, unquote, exactly what he said, then God disappears all by himself. Why? Because when you're doing things that are sinful and wrong, you don't want there to be a God. You're not going to want to go to church on Sunday morning if Saturday night you were doing some of those types of things. And so that's why they've been so adamantly teaching this to our children for so long. And back in the 1930s, one of the official goals of the Frankfurt School, which was such a radical goal at the time, but they said, we want homosexuality taught to children in the schools. It took them about 65 years to get that to start happening. And now, 90 years later, it's full swing. Four-year-olds, five-year-olds, six-year-olds. But that's how evil their agenda was.
Now, the UN has a new one that they're promoting. They call it social-emotional learning. And this is, by the way, ubiquitous in the classroom in America. They talk about SEL competencies that are used to develop justice-oriented global citizens. This is right from the website of CASEL, the main organization pushing this, funded by Bill Gates of hell, funded by Rockefellers, funded by all the usual suspects. And there's a lot to say about this, right? You know, we used to have competencies like the child can read a text and summarize it. The child knows his multiplication tables. The new competencies are like empathy and compassion. And if you don't agree with open borders, you're not compassionate because, hey, there are poor people on the other side of that border. They have a right to come to your country. If you don't agree with abortion, you're not compassionate because, hey, the girl's in a tough spot. She needs to kill her baby. And so, hey, you must be a hater. If you don't agree with homosexual marriage, you don't have any empathy. The poor homosexuals, they love each other and the government's standing in their way. So this is what they're doing, folks. They call it the affective domain. And if you go to the history tab on CASEL, they took this down after I started exposing it. But right there, they tell you that CASEL and the term social-emotional learning came out of a meeting in 1994 at the Fetzer Institute. Well, I didn't know much about the Fetzer Institute, so I looked it up. And it turns out that it is a new age center of occultism working to inject spirituality into the schools. It's based on the teachings of Alice Bailey. We'll come back to her. And really, really interesting. I want to show you a couple of quick things. We're going to come back to this. But the leading luminary behind this whole thing is Professor Linda Lantieri at Columbia University Teachers College, the most influential teachers college in the world. By the way, that's where John Dewey set up shop, too. And listen to a video from Fetzer about this.
Courses like this are rooted in social and emotional learning, or SEL for short, a style of teaching that was pioneered by Linda Lantieri.
I did not imagine that I would be living to see some SEL in 92% of the nation's schools.
92%, it's a lot more than that now, right? But listen up here.
I knew that if we didn't add the spiritual dimension to this work, we were going to leave kids with not all they needed to know. And the Fetzer Institute is really poised right now to step up in supporting this movement.
Fetzer understands that a basic science to establish the natural spirituality of the child presented a blueprint for building a new system of education. The people of Fetzer walk the walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do, right? Spirituality. So let's go back to Linda Lantieri. Got a nice little video of her here explaining where she's getting her ideas from. Listen up.
I'd like to offer some guiding agreements that hopefully we can all agree to in this next hour and a half that we're spending. And they come from one of my teachers, who, by the way, showed up at my council table, always does. I hate to say she's passed to another dimension because I have regular communication with her.
Yeah, she's talking with her friend who passed but hasn't passed because she's talking to her every night, so she's just in another dimension. Folks, these people are talking to demons, okay? And we just need to be really, really clear about that. Now, UNESCO, the UN Education Agency, has a whole agency dedicated to injecting this into schools worldwide. It's called the UNESCO Mahatma Gandhi Institute of Education for Peace and Sustainable Development. It's headquartered in India. I was just there a few months ago. Obviously, they don't want to talk to me. But founded by the three amigos here. This was on the left here. You see Irina Bokova. She was the actual communist, card-carrying Communist Party member who was running the UNESCO until recently. She served as foreign minister in the Bulgarian communist regime that slaughtered about 250,000 people out of a population of 10 million, to give you some sense of how ruthless they are. Right there in the middle, you've got Roza Utunbayeva. She was the dictator of the Soviet Kyrgyz Republic and the president of the Soviet National Commission on UNESCO.
So two of the main three people involved were communist masterminds strategizing how to use other people to get what you want. It always amazes me. There is a red behind every evil scheme going on in the world. Why? They are Satan's disciples. He came to kill, steal, and destroy, and that's all the communist movement has ever done or will ever do. And it just, I'm still amazed, even though I've studied this so long.
And then last but not least, you had Dr. Karan Singh, the co-chair of the World Commission on Global Consciousness and Spirituality, and also the Minister of Family Planning during the brutal Soviet-backed sterilization campaign in India under Soviet puppet Indira Gandhi. So, yeah, these are the people that they thought ought to be pushing this SEL into schools worldwide. And they'll tell you what they're doing with it, too, right? Here's one of their little webinars, one of their leading luminaries at UNESCO, MGIP.
From UNESCO MGIP, that is based in New Delhi, and we'll be talking to you today about socio-emotional learning and how we feel that this is the key to building global citizenship. My name is Nandini Chatterjee Singh, and I'm a neuroscientist by trade.
It's the key to building global citizenship, right? And I've got a lot more I could show you. We're going to skip a lot of this just because we don't have time. But I mean, they're promoting terrible, terrible things in the classrooms with the climate change fraud. You know, just to show you a little bit more about what they're doing. They're taking the kids on field trips to mosques. They got the five pillars of Islam. The U.S. Department of Education put out this document. where we need to infuse the curriculum with Islamic traditions. They're doing Buddhism in the classroom. They're doing Hinduism in the classroom. They're summoning spirits in the classroom. They're making the kids apologize for their Christian privilege in the classroom. In California, they adopted an ethnic studies model curriculum where the kids had to chant to the pagan, demonic, Aztec deities of cannibalism, war, and human sacrifice. And I mean, I wish I was kidding about this stuff, folks, but it's like blatant. It's in your face. It couldn't be more clear. And of course, UNESCO is leading the charge now to globalize education and to do this around the entire world. Obviously, this is a very abbreviated history of how we got here. Maybe in a future session here on Agenda Weekly, we'll go into a little bit more depth on that. We'll look at the role of some of the big foundations, the federal government, et cetera. But let's go back to UNESCO for a moment. You know, they've been very open about their desire to build a one-world government to combat family attitudes. The first guy they put in charge of UNESCO, surprise, Julian Huxley, the president of the British Humanist Association and also the president of the British Eugenics Society. Right after the Nazi Germany, too. I mean, hard to imagine that's the guy they thought would be the best fit. In their international agreements, they openly say that all the kids in the world need the same standards of learning, that the basic learning content and needs is something that's a common and universal human responsibility. In other words, a UN responsibility. In 2000, the UN signed the Dakar framework where they said we have to use education to change people's attitudes and values. 2016, they came up with a global action plan. They said the education has to deal with the spirituality of children. It has to advance global citizenship. And by the way, this is happening in America, too. Don't think it's not. Here's Arne Duncan, Secretary of Miseducation for 7 years under Barack Obama.
Hi, I'm Arne Duncan, U.S. Secretary of Education. And we are so honored that the UN Secretary General has designated the United States as a champion country of the UN Global Education First Initiative.
Ah, so we're not just participating. We're a champion country, right? And the end game here, folks, is to have a one world system of education. And the UN's been making a lot of progress on this. They actually had Robert Mueller, the Assistant Secretary General of the UN, write the World Core Curriculum, which he said should be taught to every child in every school in every country in the world. And he said something interesting in the foreword in the teacher's manual. He says the underlying philosophy upon which it's based is going to be in the books of Alice Bailey by the Tibetan teacher Jeval Kul. Alice Bailey was the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company. True story. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. They now call it the Lucius Trust. And that Tibetan teacher was not a Tibetan or a teacher. In fact, it was an ascended master, a spiritual entity that Alice Bailey claimed to be communicating with. So I've got her books that she claims to have channeled from these demonic entities. Education in the New Age is one of the big ones. She says we're laying the foundation for a new species of human being, right? A more highly evolved unit. Through education, she says, with her demons, self-consciousness must be unfolded until the man recognizes that his consciousness is a corporate part of a greater whole. Okay, that's the main objective of all true educational endeavor. Love of self, right? What could go wrong with love of self? Says world citizenship should be the goal of the enlightened with a world federation and a world brain. Says we're going to get there fusing Marxism and neo-scholasticism using the chosen methods of John Dewey. Isn't that amazing? We're back full circle now to Mr. John Dewey. And folks, when she says education should be creating world citizens, like they're not even beating around the bush anymore. Here's the Secretary General of the UN at the time when they adopted the Global Action Plan on Education. Listen.
Education must do more than produce individuals who can read, write, and count. It must nurture global citizens who can rise to the challenges of the 21st century.
So global citizens, folks, again, they are not messing around here one bit. All right. Now, Bill Gates signed a deal with UNESCO in 2004 to create global education standards, global curricula, global teacher training programs, and all the rest of it. And then he came back to the United States and right away started pouring millions and then billions of dollars into Common Core. And one of the things he did with Common Core was buy a bunch of ads to tell us how great they were. Here is one of the ads they bought to tell us how awesome Common Core was going to be. Listen.
As a graduating senior in, say, St. Louis, as prepared to get a job as the graduate in Shanghai? Well, it turns out the answer to both of these questions is no. Because for years, states have been setting different standards for what students should know and be able to do at each grade level. What we really need are clear goals. That's where the Common Core State Standards come in, The standards are consistent from school to school, and they match up against international standards, too. Now we know how we're doing compared to just about everyone.
They match up against international standards, too, right? Seattle, Chicago, Shanghai, Paris, all the little slaves will learn the same stuff. Unless you still are under the misimpression that your children are learning how to read, write, do math in school, they're not, right? Here's the Deputy Secretary of Education just a few years ago.
The National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP, which is called America's Report Card, reports that two-thirds, get this, two-thirds of American eighth graders are not proficient in any core subject.
All right, folks, there you have it, straight from the horse's mouth, right? They are less than one-third of the victims of the government schools are proficient in any core subject, right? Imagine that in any other business. It would be the SWAT team breaking down the door by morning, right? It'd be fraud. So we see Christianity getting clobbered. And I wanted to spend the last couple minutes we have here talking about what we do about this. I think the first thing we need to do is we need to understand that the school building is on fire, right? It's really worse than that. But if the school building is on fire, you know, and your first response is, I should write a letter to my school board. Like, no, right? I mean, yes, write a letter to your school board, but after you rescue your child from the burning building, then write a letter to the school board and let them know that it's on fire. First things first, get your child out of the burning building. And really, this is much worse than a burning building, right? A burning building or hurts your child physically. Here, they're being destroyed physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, morally, academically, you name it, right? So pastors and churches ought to be sounding the alarm and facilitating a mass exodus. We need to go back to the scriptures, right? Why do we even do education? Who should be doing education? Notice Deuteronomy 11. Parents, fathers, you're supposed to be teaching your children about God and his laws when you're sitting in your house, walking by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. We're supposed to be bringing them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And, you know, God doesn't have a full curriculum outlined for us, but he gives us the basics. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, he says in Proverbs 9:10. It's the beginning of knowledge, we read in Proverbs 1:7. And we all know there's no fear of the Lord being instilled in the government school. So we have a big, big problem here. Jesus gave us a nice little formula. Caesar, the things that are Caesar's, to God, the things that are God's. Now, obviously, that was in the context of taxes. But what about our children, right? Whose image is on your child? And if you said Caesar, that's the wrong answer, okay? Caesar's image is not on your child. God's image is on your child. So you better take seriously what God has to say about this. I think we need to rethink the purpose of education, right? I love the way Classical Conversations puts it. I have my children enrolled there, great group. And they say the purpose of education is to know God and make him known. Okay, I love that. That really is the real purpose of education. And like God says, like, seek first the kingdom and all the other stuff he'll add to you later, right? Yeah, if you do a good Christian biblical education, yeah, you're trying to be good at reading and math and all the rest of it. But the first thing and most important thing is to know God and to make him known. So if you want help getting your kids out, public school exit, I serve as a volunteer leader there. We're working so hard to get the kids out. My new book that Curtis, you were kind enough to endorse, is Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, Government School's War on Faith, Family, and Freedom, and How to Stop It. Before that, I did Crimes of the Educators and the story, basically how they turned our kids into illiterates. So I would encourage people to realize this is a Great Commission issue, right? Matthew 28 tells us to go make disciples of all nations. If we're to make disciples of all nations, how much more should we be doing it with our own children in our homes, right? It is a spiritual battle, folks. I hope this showed you that what we're dealing with here is a spiritual problem, okay? It's not flesh and blood. It's spiritual. We're dealing with powers, principalities, the rulers of the darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. So, folks, we have got to take this seriously. I believe we have one of the greatest crises in the history of the country, in the history of the church. We have a situation that if we don't deal with it, we're going to lose everything. So I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning into Agenda Weekly. I do want to encourage you to share this information with others. You know, deal with your own family and then sound the alarm, folks, because our children are being harmed in the most serious ways possible. And I think a big part of it is that we as parents have not been looking to God's word for what to do about this. The history is incredible. We'll probably talk more about it in the months ahead. But Curtis, I want to thank you again for all that you do. It's a great honor to be here with you. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. God bless you, and I hope to talk to you again very soon.
God created the family to be the bedrock of instilling values, educating the children, modeling to the children what it means to be a man and a woman. So as they grew up, it would be very easy to transition into adulthood because you've been around a man and a woman your whole life that love you and that have instructed you in the way you should go. But the other side saw the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. So hundreds of years ago, they started penetrating the educational institutions because they wanted to educate the children so the children would follow their directives and not their parents. Do whatever you can to work to get all the children you know of your friends and family and people at church and schools and wherever around out of the system. Every child we can pull out of that wicked system, we can have a part in saving their hearts, minds, and souls from absolutely being destroyed. I'll have a link below to Public School Exit that Alex Newman is involved in. It gives you some resources and helps motivate you to realize, okay, I need to make this happen. How am I going to do it? And there's a lot of different ways of doing it, but it's so important. Our verse for this week is Mark 12:17. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Our children are God's, that he has loaned us to raise up and steward for him. And so we have to be faithful in raising them up to love and fear him and keep his commandments. Otherwise, we failed in our duties as parents, and we failed our country to not raise up a generation that would stand for and defend and protect the freedoms we've been given and the morality that is the foundation of those freedoms. But anyway, I really appreciate you joining me today. And until next week, God bless you.